Adagio. They come close together. No ordinary Joe fighting on. Camprond is back.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
This is the Sunday morning edition of Racing Across America, and I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. As always, on a Sunday morning show, we'll recap some of the stakes action from yesterday, some Aqueduct, some Churchill, Laurel, Woodbine. Also have a couple other videos to take a look at in the first segment. A little bit later, we'll do some handicapping also for this afternoon. A little bit later on, we'll be joined by Matt Hagerty from the Daily Racing Forum. He, of course, is the news correspondent. And there was some news this week from the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority. The Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act passed and goes into effect kind of sooner rather than later, but they announced some rules, as it were, just model rules, draft rules, they called it, came out this week, and they're up for public comment. And but again, Matt wrote a couple articles about that the end of this week, so I thought we'd touch on that because it will have an effect, clearly have a major, I think a significant impact on the game. And so we'll get some thoughts from Matt on, again, Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority, which came out with those draft rules earlier this week. Do let me remind you, the $200 bonus, sign-up bonus, love to have you become a member of Capital OTB Bets. You can play on your phone, your computer. Hey, you can come down to the Racebook or one of your local parlors and make deposits and withdrawals and play on your account at the machines as well. Don't forget that. But all the bells and whistles available to you with a Capital OTB bet account, plus a sign-up bonus. There are some rules and restrictions. Check out the website for more information, capitalotb.com. And don't forget Churchill Racing in November. There's a 3% bonus available. Again, there's some restrictions there as well, but check out the website. If you're playing some Churchill, maybe you can make a little extra dough during November with the bonus. Don't forget also football action here at the Clubhouse Racebook today. NFL Sundays throughout the season. You can check out all the football action and all the racing action right here at the Clubhouse Racebook. Great venue to enjoy racing and football on Sundays here at the Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. All right, let's kick things off in New York, where I was in doing the handicapping show yesterday, and there was probably about three times where I said, I did not see that coming. And one of those results was in the Artie Schiller. The Artie Schiller yesterday. And it started, we had Dave Grendig on yesterday when he was on with us. He said at this point, you know, in the morning doing the show, everything's still on the turf, but the later races, they kept the MTOs, expecting a little rain. Well, subsequently it did rain, but the last few races, the only one on the grass was the Artie Schiller. So they kept it on the grass, and I'm just the condition. By then it was listed as good, and the actual chart says showery and good. And if you were watching the signal, you could see some rain coming down, but they left it on the turf, and so that's the way it played out on the turf, but did not play out logically. They got the surface they wanted, the result, well, some people I'm sure got the result they wanted, because it made for some crazy payouts. But we will watch the stretch run here. Tell Your Daddy, the number six horse. They wanted the Breeders' Cup last week. They didn't get it. They were on the outside looking in. You can see Tell Your Daddy is wearing down Rinaldi. I thought Rinaldi was interesting, perhaps on the front end. And you can see Rinaldi's there, just comes up a little short late. Tell Your Daddy is holding off for a while, number 12 mandate, but then that one goes by like a good thing. I mean, Tell Your Daddy, like I say, they were looking for the Breeders' Cup. number 12 mandate, they were looking for this race coming off a starter allowance win last time at Laurel. Mandate, 44-1, $91.50 is the payoff, as I say. Did not see that coming. This is a horse they had claimed last May. Bruno Schickendance and Wayne Potts claimed this horse for $25,000 at Belmont last May. They subsequently made a number of Naira starts, including a couple up at Saratoga, but with little success. They had a second-place finish in July and a $25,000 claimer. And again, they claimed the horse for $25,000 back in May. So no Naira success. Subsequently, Bruno Schickendance says, I'll send this to one of my other trainers, Robert Johnston, based down at Penn National. He takes the horse over. They go over and go to that starter allowance at Laurel back on October 10th, so just about 4 weeks ago. And not only score and score nicely, they do it with a lifetime best buyer number. Now, the lifetime best buyer number still looked a little light as compared to this group, but as you saw there, it won like a champ yesterday. It was the first stakes victory for trainer Robert Johnston. Riding that was Andrew Wolfson, who is a Boston Spa native. He's now based out primarily at Penn National, but came in obviously for the ride. He had ridden the horse to that victory at Laurel a few weeks back and rode very nicely to get it done in a New York Stakes worth $150,000. So it looked like maybe not such a good claim off the last two starts. Pretty good claim for $25,000 last May. They put the majority of $150,000 purse into their account after the win yesterday. And again, nice win for the horse, nice win for the trainer who gets, again, his first stakes win, and nice win for, again, a locally based product on board, Andrew Johnston, a Boston Spa native. So a little bit of an upset in the Artie Schiller at Aqueduct yesterday. And I was in doing, OTB Live in the afternoon. And as I say, there were a couple of spots where I said, didn't see that coming. That race and race number 7, A Will Away, $94.50. And I'll just give you some of the results here. With the two $90 winners in race 7 and race 9, the pick six was carryovers up and down. There were nobody was going to have six. I'll give you the sequence here. The sequence starts out with a $12 winner. Then you had Chance O from Todd Pletcher, paid $3.90. So I suppose people putting pick tickets together could have pared down there, certainly. A Will Away, $94.50. Race 8, another big favorite. Happy Medium wins at $2.70. Then what we just saw in the Artie Schiller, race 9 mandate, $91.50. And Alicia's Way winds up the day, $32 and change. So you had two $90 winners, a $30 winner in the mix, and two chalks. And I'm assuming that folks who maybe hit these pick tickets were going short on the chalks and maybe all balling those $90 races, or you lucked in with your phone number or something. But again, nobody had six, but I'll give you the payouts here. 5 of 6 in the pick six. And this is interesting. 5 of 6 in the pick six for a dollar. Pick six down there is a dollar. 5 of 6 was $20,000. The pick 5 for 50 cents was $52,000. So I don't know whether there was any tickets like this, but if you had the pick six for a buck and you had the last 5, those were your 5, had to be kicking yourself a little bit that you didn't play the pick 5 and wind up with $52,000 as opposed to $20,000 at a dollar versus 50 cents yet. The 50 cent pick 4 with the two $90 winners, again, started with race 7. So you would have had the $94 winner, $270, $91, $32. The pick 4 for 50 cents, $15,000. So, again, it was a little hard to maybe see those two $90 winners. But for the folks who did, congratulations. Oh, and as I say, they were all carryovers. So there's $61,000 carrying over into today's pick six at Belmont. So again, a couple of chances where I don't think I was alone, where didn't see that coming. But as I say, if, on the other hand, you had used those in there and maybe wound up with one of those nice payouts, I am applauding, because that would have been a great day winding up with any of those. As I say, you would have kicked yourself maybe the five of six in the pick six. If you had the last five, again, it's probably with the two $94 winners, there were probably less of those tickets out there, if any. But again, even if you wound up with the $20,000, I would think you're kind of happy. All right, let's move on to Churchill Downs, the Dream Supreme. It got a little bit disappointing when Wisconsin scratched. It was going to be fun to see another duel between Wisconsin and Bell's the One. But Wisconsin, trainer Greg Foley had come out and said the horse was just a little off the last couple of days, so they're going to put her away for the season, come back for a five-year-old season next year. So Wisconsin scratched. That certainly made Bell's the One the horse that the betting public was going to tilt towards. They did in a 4-5 fashion. We'll watch the stretch run here. Bell's the One is the number six horse. Club Car was the logical alternative. Club Car is the number five, but winds up chart margin at the end is a length. Club Car well clear of third place finisher Frank's Roquette, but Bell's the One, Corey Lannery on board, who gives a little fist pump as he comes under the wire, and you can see Bell's the One just has the momentum here. Well over $1 million in earnings before this victory. She's just a really, really talented five-year-old mare. Corey Lannery, after the race, said it and said it well. Shows up every time. She now has four victories and seven starts this year with a couple of second-place finishes. Overall, that was the 11th career victory in 22 starts. And horses just that. Winning 50% of your starts is not something that is easy to do or is done very often, and certainly not at the level she races at. So Bell's the One gets it done yesterday at Churchill in the Dream Supreme, which, as I say, got a little bit disappointing when we didn't get Wisconsin, but then lived up to the marquee value of Bell's the One getting it done in there. We'll move on to Laurel, and they had three stakes races. We talked about one yesterday with Dave Litvin, but the other two were some two-year-old stakes, so I thought we'd take a look at those. Always fun to see what the two-year-olds are doing this time of year, and are these horses maybe we watch? Certainly down at Laurel in Maryland, you watch as potentially continuing on that Maryland circuit and maybe showing up at the Preakness if they don't elevate to the level of, hey, let's try the Derby. And sometimes that happens with these Maryland-based runners, but again, they can show up taking their shot in the Preakness a little bit later in the Triple Crown season. So we'll see if that works out, or the Miss Preakness, or the Black-Eyed Susan on the female side. And we'll kick things off with the fillies yesterday in the Smart Halo. The favorite was By the Best at 2-1, so kind of a lukewarm favorite, but does get it done for Kathleen Lynch. Gets it done. Chart margin 3.25 here, so pretty easy victory. Running second, Luna Bell, the number three. Click to Confirm runs third as the rank outsider at 21-1. But By the Best, now three wins and five career starts. Most of them had been out of town. You know, a Mid-Atlantic based horse, but not Maryland. Trains over Fair Hill. Debuted at Pimlico in May and ran second. Then a close up fourth at Delaware in June, then sat off most of the summer, well, sat off all summer, actually. Came back on September 29th at Delaware, broke the maiden, did it impressively. One of those that I often talk about, two-year-olds that are lightly raced, they get a little bit of a break like that, a couple of months, 3 months, even longer, 6 months, they can come back improved. That seems to be the case with By the Best, who was running decently before the break, but took summer off and came back. Improved effort, won the maiden race pretty nicely, and then last time was in an optional claimer over at Delaware and won that pretty nicely as well. Follows it up with a victory yesterday in the Smart Halo. So, again, since the summer break, 3-for-3, couple of wins at Delaware, and now a stakes win. She'll be an interesting horse
to watch. Now, everything we've seen from her at this point has been sprinting. So what will be the game plan next year for By the Best? I don't know, but so far so good. So, again, we'll keep our eyes on her through the winter to see if she that, – that's one thing about Maryland, Laurel, that they have a really nice stakes program, really – throughout the winter. It's about every 3 weeks they have a nice stakes day. So we'll see if By the Best shows up. I didn't read any follow-up on as far as, you know, it's the time of year if you have a good two-year-old. Sometimes you, let's keep going. And particularly, as I say, if there is a nice stakes program available, but sometimes it's, hey, we have a nice two-year-old. Let's kind of sit on the sidelines and, you know, plan for next year. So we'll see what's up for By the Best. On the boys' side of things, the James Lewis, $100,000 up for grabs for the two-year-olds going six furlongs. And in the James Lewis, the favorite was Run to Daylight at 2-1. That one disappoints running seventh. Run to Daylight is going to be the number two horse. Second choice was No Sab Nada, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the number eight who runs third. Third choice at 3-1 was Local Motive. J.D. Acosta on board, and you can see here, it's a nice, really nice stretch duel. And you think Beast or Famine, the number six, is going to go by. And at one point, I think did go by. But then on the rail, Local Motive says, nope, not going to go by. And comes on again, as I say, under J.D. Acosta. Caramanos was on board, the number eight who ran third. And it was Dexter Haddock on the sixth horse. Not familiar with him. But again, it was a nice stretch duel there. Beast or Famine, who ran second, had 1, 2, and 3 starts coming into this. So now 4 starts, a couple of wins, and a second-place finish, including a stake. So this is a horse. Beast or Famine is one that is going to be very intriguing. But Local Motive had already kind of proven to be a salty two-year-old runner in the Mid-Atlantic region. I'm just looking here. Coming into yesterday, had run 5 races at 5 different tracks. Now, doubled up at Laurel, having run third in the Maryland Million Nursery back on October 23rd. But otherwise, had tried Monmouth, Timonium, Colonial, and Pimlico. Had done some turf and dirt. So has a turf win, has a dirt win. Did have a race. The race at Timonium was pulled up and vanned off. Subsequently, has had 3 improving efforts and breaks through with the win yesterday. So, again, it seems like Local Motive is going to be one worth watching as well because they've shown some talent so far. Again, I'm not sure this is one that's going to break into that kind of open three-year-old scene and play on the Triple Crown trail, but worth watching over the winter down at Laurel as the two-year-olds will become three-year-olds and then maybe playing into kind of heading towards Preakness potentially. Again, this is a horse that hasn't stretched out either, though, so... The 2 2-year-old races yesterday at Laurel were kind of playing into 2-year-old sprinters, which can go either way. We all know the siren call of stretching out your 2-year-old is too great for most people. And so we'll see what they do with those horses going forward. But at this point, they're kind of proven sprinters. And I have no argument. Somebody take your shot and find out whether you have a horse that can go longer. But at this point, they've only the 2 winners of the 2 2-year-old races have only taken shots sprinting. All right, and one more race from Laurel, the 38 Go-Go. We talked about this one with Dave Liffin yesterday, and when we were talking with Dave, I had pulled up a replay from Sosua. Dave kind of likes Sosua a little bit as well. Josie from Steve Asmussen was the morning line favorite and went off as the actual second choice as I'm looking at the chart. Josie's the number 7 horse, went off at 9-5. But the even money favorite was number 5, Miss Leslie. And betting public got it right. You have to trust the betting public. This one was 4-1 on the morning line, but came off an optional claiming win at Delaware last time and trained by Claudio Gonzalez. You can see it's kind of a cavalry charge here, but Miss Leslie eventually pulls away half a length. Separating second and third was ahead. Looking dynamic, runs second. Villanelle runs third in here. But as you can see, looked a little bit more like a length there under the wire. But the chart says half a length. Miss Leslie gets it done. Nice 3-year-old filly from Claudio Gonzalez, has now won 6 times in 15 starts, has won well over $250,000. And I'm guessing with yesterday, I won now over $300,000 with yesterday's purse. Based in running pretty much Mid-Atlantic this year, Pimlico, Monmouth, Charlestown, Laurel, and Delaware. So a nice, as I say, 3-year-old filly on the Mid-Atlantic scene, and gets it done in the 38 go-go yesterday as the even money favorite. All right, let's go take a look at a couple of races from Woodbine as well. They had a couple of stakes north of the border, and up at Woodbine, we'll kick things up with the Maple Leaf. And again, we talked about this one with Dave Litvin yesterday, and we were both kind of interested in Mervalo. Mervalo, who last year had a pretty solid 3-year-old filly season up at Woodbine. Not necessarily stellar, but it seemed to indicate some promise going forward. And they clearly were hoping that promise would come to the fruition as they were trying graded stakes throughout this year with Mervalo. It was another graded stake yesterday, but it was a grade 3, and it looked like finally she was maybe getting to some company she could break through with. Mervalo, however, I thought Mervalo would probably go off the favorite. Mervalo, however, was 9-2 as the second choice, the third choice, actually. 3-1 favorite, and it's 3-1 indicating betting public wasn't really sure which direction to go, but it was number 3, Sky Gaze. No shock, it's Mark Cassie. Patrick Husband's on board. Last couple of starts, a win, 2 back in a stake at Woodbine. Last time, a pretty good second, but gets it done here. Again, as I say, the lukewarm 3-1 favorite, pretty easily. 4.5 lengths is the chart margin. Sister O'Toole's second, and Mervalo winds up third. You can see the one, Mervalo, is just kind of not able to hold on as they get to the wire. Just loses the bob and runs third in there. So, again, it was Mark Cassie with Sky Gaze for owner Tracy Farmer. Now has won 6 starts in 13, 6 wins in 13 starts. 4 of those wins up at Woodbine, 4-8 at Woodbine. So nice little runner for, as I say, Cassie and Tracy Farmer. And also on the agenda yesterday at Woodbine was the Bessarabian Grade 2 event, $175,000 up for grabs. For the 3-year-old and up, fillies and mares going 7 furlongs. Favorite in here was Our Secret Agent, the number 7. But the winner as what the second, the third choice at 5-1, Lady Spitestown for Roger Atfield. Emma Jane Wilson on board. Lightly raced 3-year-old filly, but undefeated. So you're getting an undefeated filly from Roger Atfield, who only had 1 start this year, but looked pretty good getting the victory there. So 3 nice improving buyer numbers and gets it done on Saturday afternoon as well in the Bessarabian. Again, Lady Shakespeare, the number 4 horse. As I say, the chart margin 4 lengths, so pretty easy winner. Favored Our Secret Agent winds up 3rd at 3-2, and Allow Liberty runs 3rd. At 18-1, but a pretty easy victory. So Atfield, Charles Fipke, Emma Jane Wilson, the team now 4-4 with Lady Spitespear. Be interesting to see what they do with her. I mean, this is clearly a talented runner, lightly raced, has only had the 1 start prior to this year. So clearly there was some kind of an issue. A couple of starts last year that was the maiden breaker in August, then won the Natalma. Which is one of the important 2-year-old races at the end-ish of the year, September, on that. So to go 2-2 last year. So you have a horse with that kind of talent, you're not sitting off from September until September. You know, you're not off a year with that unless there was some kind of ding. But clearly they have gotten over the issue. Horses, again, 2-2 so far this year, including the stakes yesterday. So we'll see what's up next for Lady Spitespear. All right, I have a couple other videos to take a look at in this segment before we move on. We had Dave Grinnegan yesterday, and I was talking about, Dave was out at the Breeders' Cup, so we had some Breeders' Cup conversation, talked about Pizza Bianca, the really nice ride from Jose Ortiz, who kind of had to pick his spots and anticipated, and every anticipation he made was correct. And so, you know, a little bit of luck, a little bit of skill, and it really worked out nicely for Pizza Bianca. And Dave said, if you get a chance, take a look at the helmet cam video, because Jose was wearing a helmet cam. And he said, it's funny, the Klarovich horses, they come into the stretch, kind of opens up the lane for him. And he thought, and Dave said, I thought, boy, is that Irad? Because folks will be up in arms if they think the brother opened up from the brother. It wasn't, it was Flavian Pratt. And as you watch, it is interesting. The Klarovich runner does open up the rail, but Flavian never looks back. I think he was just looking for his spot. We'll pick it up kind of on the far turn here, watching the helmet cam for Jose Ortiz. And you can see up in front, the white with the red, that's the Klarovich runner, consumer spending. And you'll see when they eventually turn for home, Pizza Bianca and Jose Ortiz are kind of behind that horse. But again, when you watch the race, and this right there, he kind of, okay, come up the rail. And it did look like, I'm going to open it up. But as I said, I think Flavian Pratt was just looking for his spot. And so he kind of moved out. And then Jose said, well, that's where I'm going. I think that's all the only spot he had to go. And it turned out to be the right move. So again, if you watch the race unfolded on a replay, Jose is kind of picking his spots and there's horses in front of him. So you kind of have to anticipate where something in every move he made was right. And as you see there, it's not just on his luck. There's some other things happening in front of him that broke well also with the Klarovich runner kind of. Flavian Pratt saying, oh, I'm going over here. And Jose said, oh, thank you. Opened up a spot for me. So worked out very nicely. And again, it was a nice ride. Nice win for Pizza Bianca, Bobby Flay. Bobby Flay bred the horse also, I'm reasonably certain. Yeah, breeder and owner, Bobby Flay. But the first Breeders' Cup victory for Christophe Clément. So nice there. And one more. If you've been around the racetrack long enough, you have seen fluky things. And there was another fluky thing earlier this week. So we're going to pull it up and listen to the call. Grants Pass. And I say if you've been around the track long enough, you've seen fluky things. Back in the day, you probably had to be at the track. But these days, with replays all over the internet, it's easy to kind of pull up. If somebody says, oh, something crazy happened here, you can kind of pull up. Back in the day, as I say, you had to be there if something nutty happened, and then you just told the story. But these days, video is all over the place. As I say, 20 years ago, I don't know whether we would have had the opportunity to see a race at Grants Pass. It's a little track up in Oregon. And our friend Jason Beam is the announcer up there. That's one of his circuit. I think now he does Colonial Downs. He's got a couple of tracks that he bounces amongst. But with the September to October, September to early November meet up in Oregon with Grants Pass, Jason Beam's up there calling that. Well, it was earlier this week, I think Tuesday, it was the 9th, earlier this week. The last race at Grants Pass, we're going to watch just the early portion of the race here and hear the call from Jason Beam, because as I say, if you want to see fluky at the racetrack, this is as fluky as it gets. So again, I think it was Tuesday, it was the 9th, but this was the closing day of the meet. This was the last race of the meet. A fluky situation, Grants Pass Downs.
They're in the gate. And the race is on. A little bit of a bobble there for Shizumaki Valley, who did get away in pretty decent order, though. Here's the thing up from the outside, as expected, goes right out to the front. Don't rub it. Shizumaki Valley in tight quarters there for Lead Actress as the lights just went off. Somebody just turned the lights off. All the lights went off. I got no clue what's going on, and hopefully everybody's staying safe out there because we can't see a thing. Unbelievable. Okay, we can't. And we lost a rider. We lost two riders. Great.
Luckily, the reports I read, everybody was okay, but two horses did come back without the rider. subsequently they were corralled, the horses were okay, and I've read, I haven't read and absolutely verified, but I've seen a couple of reports that the jockeys were fine as well. Two jockeys fell off. But the lights went out. Hey. And again, closing night, the last race of the meet, the lights go out. It was subsequently was declared a no contest. And as I say, luckily everybody seemingly wound up okay, horses and people. But just wanted to pull that up because and that fluky at the racetrack, haven't seen that one before. Grants Pass down. So thought I'd pull that up for a little look. Now you can tell people, yeah, remember the Grants Pass 20 years from now? Yeah, that happened. And as I say, 20 years ago, we never would have seen that. It would have been people at the track saying, hey, I was there when this happened. Now you can pull that kind of thing up. Speaking of pulling up the helmet cam, if you want to, that it's kind of fascinating. You know, they didn't put the helmet cam on all the jockeys. So to have it on the winner, Pizza Bianca, if you go to YouTube and you type in, I think I typed in on the YouTube search itself, type in helmet cam and Pizza Bianca. And you get to watch, and you can watch them all the way around. It was a great ride by Jose Ortiz, and to see it, you know, point of view was kind of interesting. All right, I'm going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll do a little quick handicapping, and then, as promised, top of the show, we'll be joined in a few by Matt Hegarty from the Daily Racing Forum. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
We had started it 2 years ago, and to me it's a privilege to be able to do this, and I mean that sincerely. And we see the need for it more and more. And when you do see the people that are in line for the turkeys, it makes it all well worth it.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Seth Merrill in the studio. Thanks for joining us. We will take a look at late pick four action at Aqua. A little preview. I'll be in this afternoon as well with OTB Live in an hour and a half or so for that. So make sure you tune in. We'll have thoughts on the live action today. But to give you a little preview, again, late pick four today. Dave Greinich has tweeted out that they are on the turf. So far on the Sunday afternoon card down at Aqueduct. I haven't seen any scratches yet or whatnot, but we'll take a look at that pick four sequence starting in race number six. Statebred Made Specials should be fun. We're going to root for our buddy Steve Bick and DT Stables. See if maybe Steve is in the paddock down there rooting on his Shirzando by McLean's Music. And when the horse started running, I asked Steve the name, and it is some kind of musical phrase. I've forgotten how exactly it plays into the musical genre, but it ties into McLean's Music and Shirzando, as I say. Some kind of musicians, I think, would know what it is, but I just know has something to do with music, so it kind of ties in nicely, and we will be rooting for Shirzando this afternoon. Gary Siaka trains, got his 1,000th career victory a couple of days ago. Congratulations to him. We'll see if he can add to it. I just think the last race from Shirzando was good enough to kind of fall in that direction, and, you know, relatively weak field. Weak, but fairly evenly matched. But again, off the last, I thought, maybe Shirzando is moving in the right direction. Second spot, I'll go with Swinton. As I often say in a field like this, you know, you go with the fresh face. This is not a complete fresh face. It's not a first-time starter, but it's a fresher face with only the one start under the belt. Claimed out of the career debut, which was okay. It was against maiden, state-bred maiden claimers. This is state-bred maiden specials, but I'll take a little shot on a horse that showed some nice early speed and, again, may have some upside potential where some of these others have more defined themselves already. BC Glory Days, another one with some early speed who seems to fit with this bunch. And off the last race, Brewpub is probably playable. I just wasn't familiar with the trainer who has only a couple of starts and no wins this year, so I wasn't quite sure what to make of that aspect. An out-of-town jockey as well. So I'll be interested to see, because I think Brewpub is going to take some action, but on the unknowns, I just couldn't put the horse up any higher. In the sixth at Aqueduct, 3, 2, 7, and 6. Race number 7 at Aqueduct this afternoon, scheduled for 6 furlongs on the grass for an allowance, state bred allowance, non-winners of 1 other than types. I have it 9, 6, 3, and 11. War Terminator on top goes out for Jonathan Thomas off a couple of good tries earlier this year. That is clearly the question mark, the readiness off the layoff. But broke the maiden nicely, just missed as the beaten favorite in a similar non-winners of 1. So if this horse comes back ready to run, could has already kind of shown some potential and talent, could fit nicely with this group. King Angelo in the second spot, hasn't been seen since the end of Saratoga, but nice early positional speed, tends to be in the hunt far, far, far more often than not. And Uncle George, who had a year-long layoff, but comeback was okay. Now with that one under the belt, Uncle George looks very playable as well. In the seventh at Aqueduct, 9, 6, 3, and 11. Race number 8 at Aqueduct, the Winter Memories. These are three-year-old fillies on the grass. I have a 3, 4, 11, and 7. I thought the 10 Invincible Gal for Graham Motion, also dangerous. Wouldn't talk anybody off of that one. Plum Alley, who showed all kinds of promise early in the career, hasn't quite lived up to it, but I thought it was a pretty good fit with this field. Not dominating by any means, but you're getting 8-1, and if you get a little bit of a price here, I think this one may be worth rolling the dice with a little bit. The last race tossed a pretty good number, a lifetime best number, in fact, so maybe this one's really primed and ready to kind of get back to what we saw at the beginning of the career. Gam's Mission in the second spot. The race is 2 and 3 back, attracted my attention. Last time up at Saratoga, not so much so. But again, there is certainly some back potential to rebound to that'll put this horse right in the thick of things. And Runaway Rumor in the third spot. Boy, the race last time, a near miss effort with a solid number. Just continues a series of pretty good races. This one might wind up being the one to beat. That said, I think it's a really, really competitive group, but I have it in the Winter Memories, race 9, 3, 4, 11, and 7. And in the ninth and final this afternoon at Aqueduct, I have it 4, 11, 8, and 9. Number 4 is Dom's Feisty Girl. Broke the maiden last time off a spring, summer, early fall layoff, so seemed to have come back as an improved performer, but I think a lot of that was also with the move down to the maiden claiming ranks. Now comes back at an N2L, but at a reduced price level, I think it's going to fit okay with this group. Second slot, we'll go with Rainbow Gal. Hasn't been seen since May, but class-wise, this horse becomes very dangerous. Makes that move I like quite a bit, state-bred allowance into an open claimer, so the layoff, I would have tilted more towards this one if we had a little more of a recent effort. But Rainbow Gal is going to be tough on the class move. Back channel with some early speed for Rudy Rodriguez and a little class drop in the ninth and final at Aqueduct, 4, 11, 8, and 9. All right, that takes you through the late pick 4 at Aqueduct this afternoon. As I say, I will be in with some thoughts on those races live on OTB Live a little bit later on, so tune in for that. In the meantime, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Matt Hegarty from the Daily Racing Forum will catch up with some horse racing industry news right after this. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Bridgestone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
As promised before the break, we are joined now by our friend Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Forum. He, of course, covers the news aspect of the horse racing industry for the Forum. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, happy to have you on because you had some news this week that I know is going to play a significant role in the industry in the coming year and beyond, and I wanted to touch on that a little bit. Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority came out with some news this week. Before we get into specifics, just kind of lay out what came out and what the HISA group did.
So what did come out was a fairly large batch of proposed rules that are expected to go into effect in the middle of next year should HISA survive some legal challenges and hit the ground running, as they say. Covers everything from medication and doping control to out of competition testing to new whereabouts rules that would be totally new to the horse racing, and then also goes through some standard language that you would lift out of the kind of state racing commission rule book, you know, such as, you know, duties of stewards, things like that, penalties for medication and doping violations. Some standardized lists of prohibited substances, and then also a large section on safety rules at tracks, and also one single rule that would govern use of the whip in all 38 racing jurisdictions.
Yeah, and I will say, I clearly this is going to have a significant impact on the industry. For me, it may be more significant than I realized, and I don't know whether I'm the outlier, but I certainly understood they were going to cover medication rules and illegal substance rules and all that kind of thing. I don't know whether I realized it was as overarching as to get into the whip rules as well.
Yeah, actually, I asked pretty early on whether or not they were contemplating addressing use of the whip, and did get an answer that yes, that would fall under the safety rulemaking. So I know that over the course of the last 6-8 months, I, you know, have put in my articles that they were expected to address whip use, and the rule that we saw, the rule that got released this week, would basically be the California rule, which is not 100% supported by the riding community. So I think there is going to be a little pushback on that one.
And the rules they put out are listed as, in your article, draft rules, and there's a public comment period, and I think you had talked to Terry Meeks, in fact, from the Jockeys Guild, as far as the whip rules and what might happen there. So what is the situation right now with these draft rules and how they will become official rules?
Yeah, this is on a really, really tight tight timetable here. There will be the public comment period, but that will end in early December. The board of HISA will then look at those public comments and do whatever changes they think are necessary before putting it up to a vote by their own board. And that, like I said, is going to take place in 3-4 weeks' time. The problem is, as far as this condensed timetable, is they've got to get these rules to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, by the first of the year if they want to get through its own public comment and approval process by the July 1st effective date next year. So this is pretty compressed. There's still a lot of work to do. I think the proposed rules are going to generate a lot of public comment from inside the industry. But as I pointed out in an article on Friday, it's not like the board has to take these public comments and give them all the weight in the world. They can go forward with this with even if they get a lot of comments that suggest that this isn't the right way to formulate the rule. You have to understand this isn't just the industry, you know, talking with the industry to get somewhere. The United States Anti-Doping Agency is taking a very active role in drafting these regulations and shepherding them through, and using some language I used on Friday, they have a pretty robust history of erring on the side of their own vision of integrity. So I'm not sure how fungible these proposed rules are actually going to be.
As I say, you talked to Terry Meeks from the Jockeys Guild regarding the whip rules, but I'm wondering if you've had a chance to get any feedback on the draft rules so far from any other industry constituencies.
You know, the rules were so, the batch that they released were so large, and there are so many little differences in them between, say, single racing jurisdiction that most of the people I talked to didn't want to comment on the rules as a whole, just because there's a lot to digest. I mean, it took me hours to get through it on Thursday, and that was skimming some of the sections that I thought were basically boilerplate that could get lifted out of the ARCI model rules book. So I think looking at it holistically, you're not getting a whole lot of pushback, but I'm sure there's a lot of industry groups or subsets of constituencies that have their eye on a single rule in there that is that they're probably expecting to mount a pretty serious push as far as amending it. There's the whereabouts rule, which is something that's very common in human athletes. That's gonna require a sea change in thinking for the industry. Now, USADA says that some of these things won't go fully into effect maybe until about 2 years down the road, so the industry will have some time to adjust. But under the new rules, trainers and owners will have to notify ISA whenever a horse changes location, and that includes taking it out of training. And that's to make sure that the out-of-competition testing program can remain robust. And there are penalties if you don't tell Heiser where your horse is, or the horse isn't where you said it was. So I think that's a big one that's going to take a little time for the racing industry to adjust its operations for.
Yeah, it seems like that is going to require the industry to come up with, to formulate some way to do that. Who would you report to? At this point, it doesn't seem like there's a logical answer to that question. So it seems like maybe a whole new bureaucracy has to be formed to take care of that.
Well, I think that, you know, in the long run, you're going to see a database that is accessible online where you can enter these certain things that are going to be required of you. Who maintains that database? I'm assuming it's HISA, but it can be folded into other databases that are operating within the industry. As you know, Encompass has a tracking option on it. So I think logistically it can be done, and it's done in human athletics.
Yeah.
USADA knows exactly where every athlete is on the U.S. Olympic team, and they say that's absolutely critical to having an adequate anti-doping control program.
And how does it, speaking of bureaucracy, how does this exactly work out for HISA, the authority? Are they essentially going to be the league commissioner, so to speak?
Well, I would say that you would call HISA itself the commissioner. If USADA does reach a contract with HISA, then you can kind of think of them as the police force, yeah, as the enforcement agency. They're the ones that will be making sure that the medication and anti-doping control programs work, dealing with all the offshoots of that. So, you know, where you might think of the authority itself as kind of the bureaucratic layer of it, then USADA is the contracted agent to make sure that all the rules are being followed.
And once again, how is this going to play out? How is the average bettor go, you know, when will they see these changes take effect? And the folks who maybe are more interested, the trainers and the owners and whatnot, how is this going to play out once again, calendar wise?
Yeah, so the effective date for HISA in the legislation is July 1st of next year. What will the bettor see? The bettor will see a consistent whip use rule. That would be something that is tangible that you could see on the racetrack. But as all medication and doping control programs are, they're largely invisible until there's a violation. I don't know precisely how the violation process is going to work out, whether or not it's going to look a lot differently from the rules that are in place. It does look like what they're calling as a primary violation. One of the, you know, for something that clearly doesn't belong to the horse and clearly is performance enhancing, that those violations are probably going to be a little tougher. And then on the therapeutic side, it looks somewhat the same, except that the time period for multiple medication violations are prolonged, so that if it was, say, three, you know, bute overages in a year, where you start racking up additional penalties, now it'll be something like three of those overages over 5 years. And that's something where USADA is saying that, in one of the few ways in which they've been directly critical of the current paradigm as far as enforcement, is saying that the racing industry over the past 20 years has unfortunately evolved to blur that line between therapeutic use and therapeutic abuse. And that the industry needs a cultural change there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, no question about it. We've kind of been saying, boy, it'd be great if there was one set of rules for the entire country, because at this point now, if something is okay in one spot and not in the other, one set of penalties as well. But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out now that we're looking at it over the horizon. And folks, you had a link in your article too. Folks can go to the HISA website and read these draft rules for themselves also. Matt, wanted to hit on a couple other things you've written about over the past couple of weeks. The Gaming Commission, New York Gaming Commission. I'm guessing from what you wrote in your article, they are now looking at that rule about coupling married couples. We had the situation earlier this year in New York with the married couple, and the horses owned and trained by very different people had to be coupled because it was a husband and wife, and everybody kind of scratched their head on that. The governor, I guess, had her chance to change that in legislation and kind of, kick the ball down the road, which I don't necessarily blame her for. She said, I'm going to hand it to the commission. And the fact is they know more than she does. And so she was waiting for their recommendation. But I guess that's going to be the game plan. The Gaming Commission is going to take another look at that.
Yeah, that's the plan. And, the veto, I think, was more based on kind of a separation of powers concept. That you didn't want the legislature, going in and changing rules that are normally set by the commission, that they'd rather keep that power within the commission structure. So, yeah, the Gaming Commission is going to take a look at that. And, I don't know where they'll come out on it. I'm kind of the old school that I wish more horses were coupled in the betting. Anything that that can create a perception of impropriety or propriety, I think is dangerous. So we'll see where they come down.
Also, I want to go back to the Breeders' Cup, and you wrote a couple articles about it, including how they're going to address it. But the situation at the end of the day last Friday with the scratch and then not scratch, purse money only. What was the upshot of that from as far as kind of a rules change or a procedural change situation?
Yeah, I mean, the way I look at it, it was a screw up. There weren't proper lines of communication. There wasn't an adequate, vesting of authority in a single veterinarian. I kind of get it. I was watching on TV, and that was an extremely chaotic scene. You had a gate crew member that appeared to be trapped in there. The horse was passed under the stall. Another starter came up to release, the eventual winner through the front of the gate. You can kind of understand that somebody made a mistake. At the same time, that mistake should not, it was a mistake. You can't just assume something happened on the other side of the gate when you didn't see it yourself. You were glad that Breeders' Cup and the CHRB and Del Mar came back the next day and said, look, one veterinarian is going to have the power to scratch, not anyone with a radio down there. And we still don't exactly know. It appears to me, just looking at some of the tote stuff, that they may have executed the scratch command, but before all of that could be transmitted to all of the other tote sites, they unexecuted it, which is not something that should happen. Once that decision is made, then it's got to be allowed to go through. Or maybe you put some sort of, didn't Twitter, start a button now where you edit it within 30 seconds? The command doesn't actually go through. Maybe you need something like that on a scratch decision, where you just kind of put a hold on the pools before the commands start getting executed so that you make sure that the scratch issue wasn't, or the scratch order wasn't an error.
Yeah, and you said it at the beginning, I feel the same way, and Jay Privman had tweeted it out, I think. He said, there's a lot of stuff going on social media. Hey, let's change this, let's make this work. And it comes down to one guy had a gaffe, a huge gaffe. And once that went into action, there was no good decision after that. I was talking about it on the show yesterday, and somebody had tossed out, once you unscratch them, can't you open up the betting again for another 10 minutes and give people a chance? And you have to play out all the scenarios. If they had done that and the horse then runs eighth, then people are up in arms over that decision. So once the mistake was made, there was no going back. There was just no good decision. And it just does come down to a bad call. Like in a Super Bowl, the last play of the game that winds up, a bad pass interference call. I mean, it's just, it happens, and it happened at the Breeders' Cup, and it was a worst-case scenario with the horse then winning the race.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the worst-case scenario is actually that horse struggling home. That's the worst-case scenario.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that he was scratched in error, everyone says, wait a second, you did scratch the horse.
Yeah.
Why did you let the horse back in if you obviously had an issue? We've seen that, played out a lot of times in the history. And like you said, it's the same thing that I wrote on Saturday morning last week, was that once the scratch command was issued, you didn't have any positive outcome from what was going to happen. There wasn't any outcome in which people weren't going to be upset in some way. I really feel sorry for the bettors in the multi-leg, watching a horse that you liked a lot, win impressively and not winning a bet. That is really tough. And at the same time, I have been on the end of some brutal brutal ones.
I'm laughing because I remember this summer up in Saratoga. So, yes, I have seen that. Yeah, I've seen that firsthand.
Yeah, I had one here too. Yeah, it's a really unfortunate game. It's very tough to summon. I understand where the bettors were coming from, and I wish there were a wish there were a better way to do it. But when I try and figure out how to change pick fours, pick fives, and pick sixes, other than declaring that last one a no contest, I don't know how you can do it. And if you do declare one of those things a no contest, then bettors are going to have to realize, well, there's going to be a lot more winners, and the payoffs are going to be a lot less, you know.
Yeah, I've thought about those kind of situations myself, and I've come up with the same thing. There's no solution that makes everybody happy. So you just try to get the constituency to understand that and move in the right direction. And it was a really unfortunate situation last week. But Matt, always appreciate the conversation. Again, you can find Matt's work at drf.com. Great coverage of all the industry news and notes, as it were. As I say, Matt, appreciate the conversation. We'll talk again.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Seth.
Always fun. Matt Haggerty from the Daily Racing Forum. And again, you can check out those articles on HISA and the draft rules. And in one of those, as I say, Matt has a link to the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority website with those new draft rules. So you can kind of parse through them as well if you'd like to. And with the public comment, as a bettor, I think we all have the right to comment as well. So if you see something in there and you want to comment on it, do so, because you have about a month for that comment period. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this Sunday edition of Racing Across America. But again, and there, I'm just watching my screen up there. They're launching the NYRA. The pregame show should come on 5 or 10 minutes or so. And kick things off, and I'm just looking here. Our post time at Aqueduct today is 12:20. Over at Churchill is 1 o'clock. Those are a couple of tracks we will be looking at this afternoon on OTB Live, and I will be back with that in, as I say, about an hour or so. Once again, don't forget, sign-up bonus. If you want to join Capital OTB Bet, we'd love to have you. Take advantage of all the bells and whistles with the Capital OTB Bet account and get a little free money with the sign-up bonus. Check out the website for rules and restrictions. Same thing with the Churchill Downs 3% bonus. There are some restrictions involved, so go to capitalotb.com for more info there. But if you're playing Churchill throughout November, you can get a little extra dough via Capital OTB. And don't forget, we'd love to have you stop here at the Clubhouse Racebook today. Join us for some football action and some racing action. It happens every Sunday throughout the NFL season, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to put a bow on it. I am going to end this Sunday edition of Racing Across America. And as I say, looking up at the screen, they are firing things up at NYRA. So we'll send you down to New York for some thoughts on this Sunday card. Be back in about an hour with OTB Live. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.